and welcome to Film Kid Asks, the podcast where I ask questions to working professionals in the film industry from the perspective of someone just getting started. My name is Jordan, and today I'm joined by Jay Prochidney, an editor from projects like Orphan Black, Snowpiercer, and The Amazing Race Canada. Be sure to watch Snowpiercer Season 2 on January 25th, 2021 on Netflix. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jay.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I'm glad. So you're a Ryerson graduate, which is the school that I am studying at. What was your experience at film school like?
Yeah, are you in image arts?
Yeah, film studies as well.
Cool, awesome. Yeah, that was the same program I was in. What was my experience? It was good. You know, it was kind of at Ryerson where I realized that editing was really where I wanted to be most of all. I kind of went into Ryerson thinking I wanted to be a director. And then it was kind of being at Ryerson that, you know, it was funny because like when I was in high school and stuff, I was always directing videos and making videos. And then for some reason, when I got into Ryerson, I just like didn't want to do that. It was really weird. And I was like, oh, this is bad. I hope this doesn't mean I'm in the wrong program. But around third year, I just kind of naturally fell into editing. And the cool thing was you could kind of stream in the area you wanted to be. So I just kind of started doing editing, and I think you only had to edit like 3 films or something. I think in third year, I ended up editing like 8 or 9 of the films in third year, just because I liked doing it and I wanted to do more. So I was like, oh, well, I guess this is what I like to do. And yeah, so after I left Ryerson, those are the kinds of jobs I went after.
That makes sense. So do you have any advice for people that are in film programs on how they can best make use of their time in school?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I thought someone had told me was just kind of thinking about how you're going to translate this into a career professionally. You know, I don't know how it is now, but certainly when I was in Ryerson, like they didn't really talk about that at all. So it's kind of like you're there for the learning, but then how to actually make a career out of it, I had zero idea. So, you know, and from what I hear, it's a little different in colleges, you know, in terms of trying to give you those practical skills that will translate you into the workforce. And like I say, I don't know what it's like now, but certainly at Ryerson, when I was there, they didn't talk about that at all. So there was kind of 2 years where I was just kind of floundering around after school and trying to figure out what to do. So, I mean, you know, like a podcast like this, you know, starting to talk to people in the industry about how to do that. I mean, that's like a great way to address that. So, I mean, hopefully this is a useful thing for people who listen.
I hope so. That's the goal. Yeah. Do you have any tips, I guess, on how you did start the process of networking and reaching out to people?
Yeah, I mean, it was, like I said, it was a very, very difficult process because I didn't have any concept of how to do it. So for the 2 years after high school, after university, I was really just trying to figure it out. I was just trying to find anyone who was making things. Luckily, I was living at home, so I didn't have to get a job. So I did have that time to just try to figure stuff out, which was great because I don't know how I would have done it otherwise. So, and just trying to latch on to any people I knew who were making things. And, you know, at that point, it was just all really low budget stuff. So I was working on a really low budget movie for like zero money. And I just met someone who worked at Chum TV, which is now CTV. And so then it's like, oh, like you have a job at a network. Like that's how you can make money. So, you know, it's kind of just keeping my eyes open and just latching onto those people who are maybe where you want to be and trying to figure out how they got there. You know, I mean, I didn't talk to people who are well established in their careers. I was just kind of looking around people kind of at my same level. I never even thought to talk to people who were like established in their careers or how to find them or anything. So, I mean, you're already like way beyond where I was.
Yeah. I mean, we do have the benefit of the internet now, which helps, and social media.
Yeah, that's
media.
True.
It's, that definitely has opened up new opportunities to reach out to potential mentors and whatnot. But yeah, I think that's great advice. So for those who don't know, can you just quickly walk us through your typical workflow as an editor?
Yeah. So basically I edit primarily in television, and at the moment I'm editing in scripted television. So generally those shows all kind of work the same way. You have the shoot period, which depends on how the show is scheduled, but let's just say in a very basic kind of generic example, they'll have maybe 9 days to shoot an hour long TV show. That's kind of probably about average mid-range amount of time to shoot. So they'll shoot an hour long show in 9 days. Everything they shoot on one day, you cut the next day. So everything they shoot has to be put together in scenes, and hopefully it's fairly finessed, you know, with sound. It may not have all the bells and whistles, but pretty well there, because you never know when a director or producer could call up and say, I need to see this scene right away. So, you know, you always need to have your stuff cut and put together. So they shoot for 9 days. That means you have 9 days to cut all those scenes together. And then they give you kind of an extra, again, it depends on the schedule, but maybe an extra 2 days at the very end to completely finesse, put it all together, see how it all, because at that point you're all just cutting the individual scenes and they all shoot out of order. So you just have the individual scenes. So then for the 2 days at the end, you can put it all in order, see how it flows all together, make adjustments there, add in any additional music, bells and whistles, whatever, just to polish it up. And then you send it to the director to look at for the first time. So 2 days after they're shooting, the director has the entire complete cut to look at. And then again, it depends on schedules, but then you work with the director for about between 2 and 4 days, maybe a little bit more, to get a director's cut out. And then it goes to the producers for all their comments. And then there'll be various levels of producers and networks and people who look, who give their notes and comments.
Wow, that is a very quick turnaround. So you did mention that you are currently working in scripted television, but you've also worked in reality TV. How does your role change between the different genres and formats?
Yeah, I mean, I started in reality TV. Well, I started in kind of lifestyle documentary, which kind of naturally segued into reality. And reality is great, you know, I mean, for an editor, because if you're interested in storytelling and shaping stories, you really have an opportunity to do that. I mean, a lot of times it might just be you alone, or it might be you with a story editor, and you're really working. And even if you're working with a story editor, you're not necessarily working completely in sync, in tandem with them all the time. They may go off and do other things or have other episodes or whatever. So it's really on the editor to find the story, which is really cool. If that's what you're into, it's just the amount of freedom, creative freedom, is incredible, because so much changes, you know, and so much, you learn all the tricks and all the tools to try to take footage, which is not interesting, not telling a story, and how to make it not only tell a story, but be engaging and emotional and interesting and compelling. And so all those tools, I mean, I'm very glad that I started in reality. It's a little unusual or difficult for a lot of times for people to start in reality and move into scripted, but that was my trajectory. And I'm really happy that's how it worked for me, because when I got into scripted, a lot of those tools that I learned in reality actually did help me in scripted, in terms of being able to help shape the story, change the story, because of course in scripted they have a script, but still, you know, there's still a lot of stuff to work out a lot of the time. And having that in my tool belt is, I think, one of the reasons why I was able to do well working in scripted.
Totally. I mean, I want to dig into that a little bit more, because I am really interested in that. But that makes sense that it would be hugely helpful. I imagine it's kind of similar in documentary, where a lot of the storytelling happens in the edit room. So
absolutely,
yeah. I'm sure it was a huge learning process, and that seems like it would be a really great opportunity. So as far as timelines, because I am curious, since you just talked about workflow, how does the timeline kind of differ in reality TV versus scripted television?
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very different because it's such a different process. So, you know, that kind of process of editing while they shoot and then only having a couple days at the end, it's not really feasible. It's hard, it's hard to remember back exactly what like the schedule numbers might be. And of course, every show is different. But I mean, having a month to do an hour long reality show is certainly reasonable. a big complicated reality show. You know, I mean, some of the cheap ones can be done faster than that, but it starts to get really difficult. It also depends on the nature of the show, because some shows are very formatted in terms of reality. Some shows are very formatted. And so those ones are easier to edit. You know, I did an hour-long lifestyle show, which was kind of like a makeover runway show called How to Look Good Naked Canada. And that was done very fast. That was done, I think that was done in about 8, 9, 10 days to do a cut, which is very fast and totally an unreasonable schedule. Yeah, the only thing that made it possible to do in that timeline is because that show was so heavily formatted. You know, they have the makeover section and the runway section, and every episode kind of follows the same formula. Whereas I did another show called The Week the Women Went, which was not formatted at all. It was just, they had, I think it was about 25, 30 camera crews in a town following people for a week. No concept of how the show will be put together. So that, I mean, we could have been editing an episode on that easily for more than a month, easily, maybe 2 months.
So what do you prefer, I guess? Because obviously there is, you can find creativity in structure. Is that a challenge that excites you, having a bunch of footage and then trying to find the story in it? Or what do you prefer when you're editing a story, something that is more formulaic or scripted or formatted, or something that does have that freedom?
I definitely love the freedom of it, for sure, because that's a very hard thing to do, you know, when something doesn't have a story. I mean, the benefit of working on a show with a format is the story kind of comes pre-installed in a way, and you're kind of just trying to fill out those beats, which is its own kind of skill, but it gets like boring after a while. For me, you know, I mean, just the idea of having all this reality to deal with in a more, you know, verite type of show, and turning that into a story and finding new opportunities to make something compelling or engaging, or, you know, I mean, that is great, because when it works, it's really exciting, because, you know, so much of it comes together in the edit.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's not a skill every editor has. You know, a lot of scripted editors would say, well, I would never work in reality because it's so daunting. You know, it's like a totally different skill set, but it's a really valuable one.
Yeah, I mean, that again completely makes sense. I could see why that would be extremely valuable to have in your toolkit. So kind of going off of that, what do you think are the most important skills an editor can have?
Well, I mean, a strong sense of story, understanding how story works. I mean, that, and some of that can just be instinctual, really. I mean, so much of what editing is, it's a really emotional craft. You know, I mean, so much of it, to be a good editor, it's really tapping into your own kind of, I don't know if this sounds weird, but it's like tapping into your own kind of emotions, your own kind of humanity, and how to translate that to an audience. And so, you know, I mean, there is a very technical side to editing. There is a very, you know, just kind of how to be good at the craft side of editing. But there's also just being in touch with your own kind of emotional responses and how things emotionally affect you as you watch them, because that's your barometer for how to make something good. You know, if you can make yourself emotionally react to what you're working on, then you can reach an audience as well.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess kind of going off of that, how would you prioritize flow versus style versus story? What, when you approach a project, what is kind of the thing that you're, you know, looking for the most? I imagine it's story, but how do you make sure that you're also, you know, fitting the flow or making it flow correctly, and then also making sure that it fits the style of the show perhaps, or how do you kind of balance those things?
I mean, Walter Murch had this kind of, Walter Murch is editor of a lot of different movies, and he's written books about editing, and he had kind of a, not a flow chart, but a kind of percentages of how to decide when to make a cut. So there would be things like physical continuity, like making a cut based on physical continuity, or making a cut based on the style, or making a cut based on, you know, and all these different aspects of why you would make a cut. And what he placed at 51% of the reason why you make a cut is emotion, which is pretty much what I subscribe to as well, in terms of like when I'm cutting something, when I'm putting together something, I'm always thinking about the emotion and how does it affect me and how do I think that will translate to an audience. And then there's all these other considerations, which, you know, if you're making a cut for the right reason, then you can consider those as well in terms of style or physical continuity or whatever. But, you know, you see things cut all the time that adhere to physical continuity and then have no impact. So you're not making the cuts for the right reasons. But that's the kind of difficult thing that you learn as you learn your craft, because when you first start out, you're like, well, just cut these together so it matches. But you have to learn a kind of different value system so that, and how to judge material. So you cut it based not on how it cuts together and flows, you know, stylistically or continuity wise, but that it has most dramatic impact.
That makes sense. I figured your answer would be something like that, but I did want to ask. So I guess, how closely do you work with the script?
In a scripted show? Yeah, I mean, basically in those first 10, 11 days that you have to put together a cut for the director to watch, usually it's pretty standard procedure that you have to follow the script exactly. Some shows will let you play around before that point, but most shows want to have a cut that just follows the script completely. Now, within that, there's still a ton of freedom. But usually, if something's really not working, I will change things in that stage, change things from the script, but only if it's really, really not working, because I really believe in trying to put forward your best attempt at what they wrote. Even if you know it's going to change down the line, to at least have one pass where you're kind of following the script. Also, most shows will also expect to see that, because if you present something that's way off the script, they'll say, oh, well, where's the scripted version? And they're like, oh, I never did that. I mean, that's not really a great answer. You say, oh, here it is over here, and you can look at it, you know? So you do need that, just in case people want to see it. But when you get to the director stage, usually there's a lot more freedom. And it depends on the show. You know, some shows are really hardcore about just give us the script in the order that was written and present that to us. But most shows that I've worked on are not like that. Most shows want you to put your best foot forward. And if you know how to improve something, just improve it, you know? And if it's good, people will like it, you know? I mean, that's the attitude on most shows that I've worked on. So often with the director, you'll have the freedom to kind of bounce ideas off each other, change things around, delete things. And, you know, these are even things that you've had in your head as an editor, like when you're putting together that first cut that's just based off the script, you know, you're often thinking, well, this would maybe be better here, or change this around or whatever. And so you'll present those ideas to the director, usually at the director's cut stage, and say, well, don't you think this would make it better? Or, you know, and often a director might just have an idea like, oh, it's not quite working, maybe we could try this. And then you'll have had all these other ideas that you've been thinking of, you know, during all that time where you put your cut together. So then you go, oh, well, how about this or this, or we could try this or that. And then, you know, if they like those ideas, then you can try them out and then give the most polished version possible to the producers for them to see for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, again, that makes sense. And so I guess, how closely are you working with the directors, the producers, the networks while cutting a show? And how many versions do you usually have to do of each episode?
So, you know, I mean, the great thing that I love about editing is that it's a really collaborative craft, and it's also a really solitary craft, you know? And I really like both of those. So, you know, when you're in shooting, it depends on the director. Some directors will have a lot of contact with you, but for the most part, I'd say it's more typical that you're left completely alone during production. Also, because production is so fast and people are so busy, a lot of the time they don't really have time to talk to you. So a lot of the times you're completely on your own. a lot of the times you have no contact with production, hardly whatever, in terms of what they're planning. So you just get the footage roll in and you respond to it. You know, a lot of the times you can figure out what the director is going for, but a lot of times it's not clear. But that's cool because you get to look at the footage, judge it for yourself, and figure out what you want to do with it and present what you think is the best version. And a lot of the times directors will say, oh, I didn't expect it to be put together like that, but that's great. I love that. Or the opposite. I hate that. Why did you do that? That can happen too, obviously. So, you know, for that first period, you're on your own a lot of the time. And you're making a lot of creative decisions on your own. You know, hundreds of decisions a day about how you think the show should look, feel, flow. And no one's kind of looking over your shoulder. You're just making these choices all on your own. And then when the director starts coming in, then from that point on, it becomes collaborative. And then people have their opinions about how they would like to see things and things. And hopefully you're all working together to make something greater and better all the time. And things can change a lot depending on what other people's reactions are to it, producers or network or director. But still, you've often laid the groundwork in your first pass of a lot of those decisions. And a lot of those decisions just remain until the end of the show. Things change, a lot of things change, but a lot of things stay the same as well. So if you're an editor with a really strong point of view, and I think that's one thing that makes a really good editor, is someone who has a really strong point of view and has a real definitive take on the material that is a persuasive take that people see and agree with and like, then, you know, you can make a lot of those decisions on your own and present it. And if you've just made a compelling enough argument with your work, a lot of that can stay. And people want editors who have a point of view often. You know, people don't want editors who will just slap something together. People usually want editors who have a real strong idea of what works and what doesn't and a reasoning behind it that is in the interest of making the best possible show.
Yeah, I mean, again, that makes sense. I feel like a fresh set of eyes on the material is probably very welcome, especially with such a quick turnaround, because there might not be that much separation, I guess, from, mm-hmm. you know, the director being on set to then seeing a you know, cut of it. So I feel like that fresh set of eyes is probably very valuable, and obviously the point of view as well. So what qualities make your job easier and more collaborative from the people in those positions?
That's a difficult question. I mean, generally you're just trying to please people. Generally, you want to make people happy. You want to present things that are, you know, people get excited about and like. So, I mean, I guess for me personally, you know, I like people who are open-minded to trying things. I like people who are working with people who are open-minded to seeing things in a way that maybe they didn't expect. Because sometimes people just have a real strong idea about what they want to see. And, you know, that can be great, you know, if they go out and they achieve it. But sometimes, you know, I mean, production is so fast, so many things can happen that get in the way of that, that sometimes you don't really get what you were hoping you got. And so, you know, I like working with people who are adaptable to that and say, are like, okay, well, this is what we got. How do we make the best of it? You know, which is what I want to do. I want to make the best of whatever I'm given. That's my point of view. That's what I'm there to do. Whereas some people, some producers, even if they didn't quite get what they were looking for, they still have that original idea stuck in their head. Like, I want it to be that, what I had originally had in mind. And that's not as fun to work with, because if they didn't achieve what they saw in their mind, it's very hard after the fact to just work with footage and try to achieve this original idea, because, you know, you're just trying to struggle to fit into this original conception. And, you know, just as an editor, that can be not as fun, because you feel like you're not doing sometimes as good with the material as you could be doing.
Yeah.
If you could be a little more kind of open to experimentation and trying different things.
Yeah, that completely checks out. So what would you say is the most challenging part of your job? And I know that probably changes depending on the project, but yeah, what are some of the hardest things that future editors should be aware of?
I mean, probably the hardest part is maybe the political aspect of it, you know, dealing with lots of different people who have different ideas and people who are signing the paychecks, right? And, you know, the people signing the paychecks have their own ideas too, about what they want to see. And, you know, I mean, that's often, I think, one of the more difficult aspects of the job is just trying to figure out how to manage all these different types of people and what they want out of the show and all that kind of thing. And making sure people feel really good, because no one likes being told your idea is garbage, you know, even if they might be. So, you know, it's about trying to merge that all. And if someone's having an issue and you don't like what they're saying to fix it, maybe there's another way to address it. So it's kind of about that people managing is maybe some of the more difficult part of the job, and not necessarily why editors get into it either, right? I mean, editors are getting into it because they want to be creative and make things and be artistic and that sort of thing, which is a bit of a different skill set than the people managing aspect of it.
Right. So I guess for people who do want to go into editing, what would you say, because a lot of them obviously will become either interns or editing assistants, what would you say are the best qualities that you look for in an editing assistant?
Yeah, I mean, one of the most important things really is just the right attitude and the right work ethic, really. That's something I wish someone had told me, is like, you know, if you come in just wanting to work hard and do a good job, and you're good at learning, you're good at picking things up, like, no one, I think, expects you to know everything, but people hope they don't have to tell you multiple times. You know, ideally, you can be told something once and you're able to do it. So that's kind of, I mean, that's so important. If you have a person like that who just, like, works hard, who wants to be there, who shows up on time, just demonstrates that they're happy to be there, happy to work, happy to be part of the whole thing, and then are able to just pick things up quickly, or at least have a system for how to pick things up quickly, you know, writing it down or whatever it is that works for you, so that you can do that. And then if you can even learn to anticipate what people might need, then you're just like golden, you know, I mean, that is just the ultimate. So that's like really just that basic work ethic stuff is really, really valuable, because a lot of the technical knowledge and stuff, you know, you can pick that up, and the right resourceful person can figure ways to deal with problems. Like, for instance, you know, if you're in over your head and you don't know how an edit server works and something's going on with the server and you don't know how to fix it, you know, like the right resourceful person can figure out who to call, how to figure it out. Maybe someone you know who's had that job before or whatever. I mean, just being able to solve problems as they happen. I mean, that's, I'm talking about, this is what an exceptional person, you know? So, you know, I mean, that is, I think, the most important. Also just having like a strong love of story, strong love of editing, interested in the craft, wanting to be involved. Those are all incredibly valuable things. And I don't know, maybe they seem obvious, but not everyone has those things. So,
yeah, no, I think those are great things to keep in mind if you do want to go down that path. So you've also been a post producer and consulting producer on several projects. So what does that role entail?
So for me, it's been kind of overseeing the creative aspects of all of post production. So in terms of supervising the edit of shows that I work on, working with other editors on the edits of episodes that I'm not editing personally myself, also supervising the sound of the show, the music, the visual effects, the color. So kind of just keeping all those elements on kind of one vision sort of thing, and making sure all those elements are coming together well and to the standards you need them to be.
Yeah, for sure. So what would you say are some of the biggest benefits to producing on a project that you're editing?
It's very hard. It's very time consuming. It takes a lot of time, and it's hard just editing. And so it takes a lot of time to do all this other stuff as well. I'm in the middle of it right now on Snowpiercer. I'm editing episodes 9 and 10 of season 2 while, you know, supervising the sound and music for the first 8 episodes. So it's all kind of happening all at the same time. So there's a lot going on. But the benefit of it is that you have a tremendous ownership over the show, you know, and it really just feels like so part of something that you've created. A lot of times, you know, you'll edit something and then it kind of gets taken over from you. It depends on the show, but on some shows, it kind of gets taken over from you. And all these elements happen after you're not working on the show anymore, sound, music, all that sort of thing. And you can see it on air and you can be really disappointed sometimes because those elements also just really affect how the editing comes across. So if they have the wrong music in there or whatever, it can really make your edit look worse sometimes. So having input in all this, and you don't have to be a producer to have that kind of input. On some shows, you can have that input just as an editor. It depends on the show, but you definitely have it if you're a producer. And not just on your episodes that you edit, but all the episodes. So it really, you know, you can really see the show through to the end and make sure that all those elements are working in a way that you're happy with. So it's great for me. I mean, because I love having that kind of ownership and having that kind of stamp on a show that I work on.
Yeah, of course. So now I'm going to open it up to a couple of my friends if they have any questions.
I was going to ask, how do you stay motivated through any highs and lows of your career?
I mean, I think, you know, I mean, the main thing for me is really the audience, you know? I mean, that's really why I love my job, and that's really why I do it, is because I want people to see the show, and I want the show to be good. And if you're lucky, it can have an impact on people. And, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, but when it does, it's incredible. You can create things that change the course of people's lives, you know, that make people see things in a different way, you know, open up communication with their family. You know, I mean, I worked on Orphan Black, which one of the characters was a lesbian, and you'd hear from so many people about how this opened up conversations in their lives with their family, being able to talk about it or come out to their family or whatever. And that is incredible, like to have a real impact on people's lives. That's why a lot of people are in this industry. So, you know, that's what keeps me motivated, is the audience and thinking about them and trying to reach them.
That's awesome.
My question is kind of based around the relationship between the director and their editor and how special that can be. And I hear stories about like Steven Spielberg and Michael Caine on Schindler's List, like having those moments together and like leaving the edit room speechless and heartbroken or really emotional because of the power of their work. And I was wondering if you had any moments like that in your work where it's been really special for you as an editor, and how can a director, because I'm interested in directing, how can a director motivate that really like awesome kind of partnership between the editor and the director, and how can we make that relationship really like powerful so you're making the best art you possibly can? I just wanted to know what you kind of thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, like in any kind of creative partnership, I mean, what makes a really good one is real trust, real openness, and vulnerability. So as an editor, like I want to work on shows where I'm respected, where I'm valued, where my point of view is respected and valued, and to be given a certain amount of freedom to try things, you know, and to not be afraid to try things, and that I can go out on a limb creatively and people aren't going to be mad at me for that. I mean, they may disagree with me, you know, and say, oh, well, I don't like this, but who will at least be open to considering it, you know? So, and that kind of relationship takes time to build trust. But, you know, if I think about moments in my career like what you're talking about, where there is just this kind of almost sacred creative moment in a way, it's because I felt valued and trusted enough to be able to go out on a limb and try something unique, creative, something that was meaningful to me. And then for the director to view that and be really emotionally touched by my contribution and what I'm bringing to it. And, you know, we'll work together still, of course, on changing it or making it better if that's what it needs to be. But just that kind of mutual respect and working with collaborators who you respect and trust, I mean, that's kind of the basis of any kind of meaningful relationship, right? So, and it's the same thing in a creative partnership.
Awesome. Thank you. I was just wondering, what's the most challenging project you've worked on and how did you overcome whatever challenges you faced on it?
Oh my, there's so many challenging ones. Oh man, that's a difficult question. There's so many ones. I mean, the show I'm on right now, Snowpiercer, is certainly an incredibly challenging show. It's very big, lots of stories, lots of elements, lots of pieces that have to come together. And there's a lot of money. I mean, it's not a super high budget show, but it still has a lot of money. And that means people have very high expectations, you know? That means that if we have, you know, we have to make it as good as possible. And, you know, if that means reshooting or whatever, like, you know, I mean, people really want to make the best possible show. And that means just being really critical of what we're doing. And, you know, Snowpiercer is a show that has had a lot of reshoots on it, which are expensive, which are time consuming. A lot of visual effects that are expensive, that are time consuming. And so there's just a lot of elements to balance. And that's, I don't know, how do you deal with that? I don't know. That's just kind of a part of the job. I don't know. That's not a good answer. But it's just kind of, I don't know. I guess it's about just keeping your eye on the prize and what we're trying to achieve, trying to work hard to, you know, make the best possible show and make people happy. Does that, I don't know if that answers your question, but.
It does. Thank you. That was great.
Just have to make it work. So
really just make quickly, it work.
Just make it work. So really quickly, before we end this off, I did ask you to prepare 5 film recommendations.
Oh, so, I forgot.
Oh no. So in that case, could you give us a few off the top of your head films that you think are either really well edited or that you really enjoy? It doesn't have to be, this isn't, you know, no one will judge you for it.
I hope not.
No. So, but yeah, if you have a few.
I mean, one of my favorite movies is 2001. I mean, just the way that film works in terms of flow and power and visual meaning and storytelling is incredible, you know, and so unlike what a lot of films are like, you know, a lot of films are very dialogue driven. So it's so exciting to see a movie like that that's so big, that is driven by, in large stretches, just the visual poetry of it. So I love that. I love films that have really showy editing that's really good too. So, you know, I really like Moulin Rouge for editing. And Jill Bilcock is the editor of Moulin Rouge. I enjoy a lot of her films and how she edits. It's very showy, but sometimes you like that. Sometimes it's good. And if it's done well, it can be really exhilarating and like no other art form really at all. Very unique when you really push editing that way. It can just be unlike anything else.
Oh, I was worried you were going to say Michael Bay when you said showy editing.
No, I am not a fan of Michael Bay movies. I find them, in terms of editing, I find them very hard to watch. I cannot follow them or comprehend them. So, so that's not my kind of thing. I mean, I work in TV, so can I offer a television show?
For sure.
I'm a fan of Damon Lindelof's shows. He did The Leftovers, which is one of my favorite shows ever, especially in the last 10 years. And the editing in that show is remarkable. And then he also did Watchmen, the show Watchmen that just came out. And there's one episode in there which is a non-linear episode. It's told from the point of view of Dr. Manhattan, who is a character who lives outside of linear time. So the whole episode is told from his perspective and his perception of time. And it is one of the most remarkable pieces of television I've seen. I mean, from a storytelling, but of course, from an editing perspective as well, it's absolutely incredible. And so I've got four.
That's, four is good. Thank you for doing that off the top of your head. That was a lot of pressure. And yeah, just thank you so much for sharing your time with us and your expertise. But that absolutely. Is all. That is all for this episode of Film Kid Asks. Be sure to subscribe and feel free to follow us on Twitter and Instagram or join our Facebook group. And be sure to catch Snowpiercer on January 25th, 2021 on Netflix. New episodes of the show.
And watch season one right now. Check it out.
And watch season one right now. Yes, new episodes of the show come out every Saturday.